Welcome back to Upstate's Health Link on Air. Linda Cohen along with you. Borderline personality disorder often results in devastating effects on those who suffer from it, as well as on their families and friends. It's estimated that 1 in 40 people in the United States suffers from this disease. But now there's a new treatment developed right here in Central New York that offers hope to many who suffer from borderline personality disorders, as well as other debilitating mental illnesses. And joining me this morning to tell us all about it is its creator, Dr. Robert Gregory, professor and interim chair of the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences at Upstate Medical University. Welcome, Dr. Gregory. Thanks for coming in today.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure.
So first, help us understand, what do we mean when we say borderline personality disorder?
Yeah, it's a very misunderstood disorder, although I think it's getting to be, there's more press about it. People are beginning to understand it better as more people come forward and as it's being diagnosed a little bit more. But the vast majority of people go misdiagnosed or undiagnosed with it, which is unfortunate because it is a potentially treatable disorder. And it's one of the most distressing disorders. It has high risk for potential mortality, is actually fairly high with it. Also causes a great deal of social occupational dysfunction. So people have difficulty forming meaningful relationships, which are also fulfilling and supportive. They may have enormous difficulty being employed full-time. So this is a very potentially disabling disorder. It's very distressing. It's potentially life-threatening. And it's really something that it's a disorder that's kind of been a stealth disorder in a way.
Really kind of under the radar.
Under the radar, absolutely.
So tell me, what does it look like? I mean, what are the kinds of characteristics or symptoms that you would, that go along with this disorder?
Well, it's something that once you hear about it might sound familiar. It's hard to put it in a nutshell, which I think is one reason it's underdiagnosed. But in a nutshell, one way of thinking about it, it's a disorder of instability. So there are 9 diagnostic symptoms, and all of them point to instability. So you have instability of self-image, and the person may have a lot of identity disturbance. You know, who am I? May feel like they're different people in different circumstances. There's instability in relationships. Relationships may be chaotic. There may be initial idealization of people, and then feeling very disappointed, very angry, and going from feeling like people are all good or all bad. And so relationships can be very chaotic. There's instability in behavior. So impulsivity is a big part of it. So people, you know, all kinds of impulsive behaviors, whether it's driving or binge eating or alcohol or drugs. Spending too much is very common. So a variety of impulsive behaviors that end up getting the person in trouble. And also impulsive in terms of self-harm. Many, but not all, of people with this disorder may engage in either suicide attempts or other self-harm behaviors such as cutting. Instability of mood. So, for instance, people can go from looking pretty good one moment and feeling okay to being then profoundly depressed, which can last minutes, hours, or days, or then alternatively getting into very angry moods where they can even get violent sometimes but have a lot of temper outbursts and uncontrollable anger. So very often people with this disorder feel like they're out of control because of the instability that's associated with it.
It sounds like a lot of these symptoms could easily, I mean, it makes very clear from your description how they could easily be mistaken for other problems like bipolar or even mm-hmm. somebody who just has anger management issues.
Yes, no, absolutely. And that is one reason it gets misdiagnosed too. So for instance, in one study I did, every patient in that study had at one time been diagnosed with bipolar disorder, but when we use strict research diagnostic criteria for diagnosing the bipolar disorder, it turned out only 15% of those people actually met criteria for bipolar. So because of the mood instability, especially, and also the impulsivity, such as sexual indiscretion, excessive spending that can occur as part of the impulsivity, it can readily be misdiagnosed as bipolar disorder. There are ways to distinguish the two, but it's not at all uncommon for it to be misdiagnosed that way.
So what's the typical age of onset for this? In other words, when would you see this occur?
Well, it can occur at any age. Most often we see it fully manifested, though, as young adult. So, for instance, someone goes off to college, or you can also see it in teen years, and sometimes older adults as well. But in the young adult group, it's actually very prevalent. It goes up from 1 in 40 to 6% or 1 in 20. So it can be very prevalent and cause a lot of problems very often. Most of the time, people with a disorder are not able to complete college, for instance, and have to drop out.
It sounds like from all the behaviors that you've described that it's got to have really devastating effects, not only on the person clearly, but on their family and friends. I mean, if they're constantly having frequent arguments or fights or possibly even running away from home, that kind of thing, poor performance at work or at school, it must be very, very difficult.
Yeah, it can. It certainly can be. And I think, you know, parents go through a lot with any child who's ill, you know, whether it's from borderline personality disorder or whether it's from asthma or what makes this disorder even more difficult, though, sometimes is that many times people mistake these behaviors and problems as just being as people having poor self-control or maybe just manipulating or attention-seeking. And so this creates some tension and conflicts very often between the teenager or young adult and their parents who, you know, are not sure whether to take it seriously or whether to give them tough love. And in the meantime, the teen is spiraling out of control.
And it sounds like there are other potential problems that can coexist, like depression. So it could, again, you're dealing with a number of issues simultaneously.
No, absolutely correct. Severe depression is almost universal, and severe anxiety occur in, both depression and anxiety occur in 90% of people with borderline personality disorder. The problem is that the depression and anxiety doesn't respond to usual treatments very often if the person also has co-occurring borderline personality disorder. So it's so important to treat the underlying condition, which is creating the anxiety and depression, then those other disorders that co-occur with it will improve over time.
So tell us about this new treatment you've developed. I mean, it's called Dynamic Deconstructive Psychotherapy.
Yes.
Or otherwise known as DDP.
Right.
So tell us about it. What is it?
Yeah, so it's certainly a mouthful of alphabet soup and hard to say. But so DDP, we can stick with that. So it's a treatment that has been around for a while. The initial studies were done 1999, 2000 is when those started. And but it's not widely disseminated yet. So a lot of research has been done on it, but not many therapists are trained in it. And the way it developed is through a combination of psychodynamic theory, a certain branch of psychodynamics called object relation theory, along with neuroscience. So as we learn more about the brain and what causes depression, anxiety, and mood shifts, it turns out that people with this disorder, borderline personality disorder, and in fact many other disorders, have a different way of processing their experiences, where they fire up a more primitive part of the brain called the limbic system, which creates a lot of the anxiety and impulsivity that we see with this disorder. And so a large part of this treatment is geared towards retooling the brain, essentially, getting the parts that aren't active more active so that they can start processing their emotions and experiences in a more productive way. One way of thinking about it is to connect with themselves and their experiences. So many people with this disorder, for instance, have enormous difficulty labeling their emotions. They may feel this burst of anxiety come out of the blue. And it feels like it comes out of the blue because they're not able to connect what may have actually triggered that. So they may all of a sudden get panicky, or all of a sudden get depressed, or all of a sudden get angry, have no idea what triggered it, and are unable to know the underlying feelings. So something may, for instance, come up, like a rejection from a friend, and maybe they're feeling ashamed and rejected, but instead of actually experiencing those feelings and knowing what they're feeling, they may just all of a sudden find themselves reaching for a knife and getting suicidal, or all of a sudden just having a panic attack out of control, or just feeling upset.
So it sounds to me like this, in a sense, follows a lot of what I understand about psychodynamic theory, or what Freud kind of proposed way back, is a certain amount of insight into the workings of our emotions and the linking, as you said, of why a certain emotion arises at a mm-hmm. certain time. Is that correct?
I would say that it's along those lines, but much more fundamental than just insight. It's actually being able to put words to one's experiences, to connect with them instead of avoiding them through, say, numbing oneself with alcohol or drugs, but actually to be able to label what's going on with oneself, to connect with oneself and connect in authentic ways with others. Very often, because they're disconnected with themselves, they may have very inauthentic relationships with others. They may the patient with borderline personality disorder may constantly be scanning others' reactions and can be very good at picking them up, and will focus on pleasing the other person or knowing exactly what the other person expects and try to mold themselves to that without really understanding what's going on within themselves. And so they may be very, like, very different people when they're around different people, they themselves may change.
I don't want to run out of time, and I just want to get to a couple of points here. How long does it take? I mean, what's the plan when you do therapy with this? Is it once a week? Is it how many sessions? That kind of thing.
Well, this particular treatment is a once a week, one-on-one kind of treatment. And we found that if it's more frequent than that, it actually can slow down the progress of treatment because it's difficult. It's a difficult treatment connect and process, and in this way is difficult.
It's largely talk therapy then.
Correct. It's absolutely talk therapy, and it's a one-year treatment. And
and has it been successful in your experience?
Yes. We've had a number of publications, a number of research, but overall, what we found is about a third of patients will have a life-transforming, absolute major change that lasts for years after treatment. Another third will have more moderate but still significant change, and another third will actually end up dropping out because they find it too difficult.
I want to take the opportunity to note that this is the first time that this has actually been included, that the psychodynamic psychotherapy is included in the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, the SAMHSA National Registry of Evidence-Based Practices and Programs, and I know that's a very significant thing to have happened, so I give you kudos for that, and it sounds like it's a very, very valuable program and very, very valuable type of therapy. In the very little bit of time we have left, are you involved in training people in this at the current time?
Yes, and that's what I'm most excited about it being on the list, is that we have the opportunity to disseminate this treatment and make it better known to more therapists so that more people can get trained and be able to help those who really need it.
Well, thank you so much for this important information and all this important work in this field. I'm Linda Cohen, and we're going to be right back with more HealthLink on Air right after this short break, so please stay with us.
Thank you.